Landing a gyrocopter outside the U.S. Capitol building to send a message is a felony, but the postal worker who did that also may have done federal agencies a big favor. That's according to Chris Comiskey, senior fellow at the Center for Cyber and Homeland Security at George Washington University and former acting undersecretary for management at the Department of Homeland Security. He writes, the gyrocopter incident presents an opportunity for federal agencies to improve their risk management strategies. Chris, it's always great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining me today. You do write in this piece in Federal Times, in some respect, gyrocopter pilot Doug Hughes has done all of us a huge service. It didn't seem like that when he was trying to land the thing. Why is it that with a little bit of hindsight, you think that might be the case? Thanks for being on, as always, Chris.
No, thanks for having me, Francis. I think basically the point I was trying to make is that sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And in this instance, we were lucky that, you've got a 61-year-old mail carrier from Florida with a very low-tech device trying to make a point about campaign finance reform. We're not always that fortunate. And so, looking at this as an opportunity for the overlap and adjacent jurisdictions here in D.C. To train together, to utilize the technology of interoperable radios and practice that in advance of another event, I think is going to be a good opportunity for all of us.
You take us on kind of a walking tour through all of those jurisdictions just in a very small, compact area that probably a lot of people in the audience are familiar with. Kind of walk me through this little tour that you write about in this piece, Chris.
Yeah, many of your listeners, I'm sure, have taken this walk from the north side of the White House. It's about 200 yards from H Street down to the fence line on the north side of the grounds. And as you move that way, Metropolitan Police certainly has H Street jurisdiction. As you move into Lafayette Park, it's the Park Service. Back onto Pennsylvania Avenue as you're walking down, it's the Metro PD again. It's Park Service when you traverse onto the sidewalk, and then the Secret Service once you hit the fence line. So it highlights, I think, some of the challenges, and that's just on the ground. Think about, low-altitude craft that are coming in across the mall there, and it really tangles the response.
What's the coordination among those groups now, and what's your sense of what good coordination among those groups would look like if it's different than what exists today?
Well, I think there have been some advancements made, certainly in the wake of the Navy Yard shooting. There's been enhanced opportunities to examine incident response and coordination. The first responders on the ground are, I think, doing a better job of utilizing technologies here in the immediate vicinity. So there is communication that's going on. I think the challenge is you have emerging threats that are not as recognizable to folks on the ground. That's when you really have to look at, what's the technology dimension to this in terms of disabling these kinds of higher-tech devices.
You raised the real complication about all of the jurisdictional elements that you mentioned a moment ago with one of the subheads of this piece. We have a link to what you wrote at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, Chris. And that's, you use the term, who's in charge? And in a situation like the gyrocopter thing, deciding who it is that takes point, I imagine, I guess it's not a point of negotiation, but somebody has to decide either that somebody else or that their organization is going to be the one that coordinates everything, right?
Yeah, I think that's right, and particularly when you have both branches potentially impacted, the executive and the legislative, making sure that coordination is tight between federal agencies and the Capitol Police particularly is going to be essential. And so, I just don't want to be in a position going forward where we've got a much more nefarious act that's occurred using a drone or some other light aircraft in which, the collision of jurisdictions makes it harder to have a good response.
So the drone concept is one that I think raises the issue that a lot of people that I talked to about this were concerned about. And that is, we overuse the word literally in our culture right now, but it applies in this case. This guy literally flew under the radar. I mean, he came in and nobody seemed to know about it. That's not a technology issue, I don't think, or is it? Or is it more of a people issue and an idea that we never thought something like this could happen?
No, I think that is a good articulation of it. I heard one of the FCC or FAA spokespersons indicate that the craft operator was not in contact with any radar tower.
Yeah, I heard
and
that
I was
too.
Like, yeah, I'm sure he wasn't. So I think that we've got to really change the lens a little bit as to what is possible at these low altitudes, and the technology has made it such, not so much in the gyrocopter itself, but certainly with drone technologies, that I think we're going to have to think about the science behind this and what can we utilize for disabling or disarming these kinds of technologies as they emerge.
The other part of this that I thought went along with that quote, because, well, duh, of course he wouldn't have been in contact with anybody. That was the whole point. Mm-hmm. He was trying to elude detection until he landed so he could do whatever he was going to do about campaign finance reform. But the other thing that went along with that was he was in his Postal Service uniform, and he was he had marked this thing with Postal Service insignia of some sort. And there were a lot of eyewitnesses to this that thought that somehow this was okay. Like this, because it had that that indicia that somehow it looked legitimate, I guess as much as a flying bicycle can look legitimate to somebody. And so there was kind of that fooldom factor going on here as well.
Yeah, and I think that's really, we can't underestimate the difficulty of the call. Even if you detect something like this coming down the mall, you know, as I think it was detected in part, and then having to make a decision about, you know, are you going to shoot this crap down or not? And that's a tough decision for those who have, you know, seconds to make those calls. So I think the kinds of planning and advance steps that we can take to, you know, make it as informed a decision as we can is going to put us in a better spot.
Chris Comiskey's a former acting undersecretary at the Homeland Security Department and writing under the title Postal Workers Gyrocopter Stunt Delivers Urgent Message. He's writing that in the Federal Times. Now, you talk about three different points in this piece that are potential touch points as we consider this. The first we've talked about to some degree, and that's coordination and communication. The second one is training, and you write joint training across agencies a key element in reducing future risk as well. Now, to be fair, I've focused in my questions so far, Chris, on the gyrocopter incident, but your approach in this piece is more directed at broad risk management than individual incidents. How does joint training work, and how should it look among all of these agencies working together to try to mitigate potential risks like this?
Well, one example, I think, in terms of the training is something that the 9/11 Commission also recommended was enhanced training on interoperable radio communications. The DHSIG not too long ago found that in the example that they were citing that while, you know, something like 479 DHS personnel that they tested had the right equipment for interoperability, only one of those individuals was actually trained to use it. And so that's the kind of issue within DHS itself that also would permeate a response when you start talking about multiple agencies in the same mix. So that's the kind of training, and actually doing exercises together. We do some tabletops, and certainly there are national exercises that we are engaged in, but really taking the law enforcement agencies and focusing their attention on joint training and operations, I think, would be beneficial.
You can see where that could potentially turn into a cultural contest of the sort that we can't describe on the radio, though, because somebody will say, well, we should be leading the training, and somebody else will say, we're not sending our training if you're leading it. Or, you know, the jurisdictional issue, the punching contest really could get crazy in something like that. Again, unless there's one organization that says this is how it's going to work and they have the jurisdictional pull to be able to make it happen.
I think that's exactly it, and that's why I was encouraging that the White House and congressional leaders, you know, set aside differences on this particular issue and really chart out a course that, you know, puts one agency at the helm on this so that we can coordinate training in a way that's going to make some sense.
And the other point that you write about in this piece, Chris, is technology. You write, cheap available technologies making it harder for security professionals to do their jobs. More attention and resources need to be directed to places like DARPA, DHS, SNT, Directorate, Science and Technology Directorate, and partners at the national labs and universities. When I hear resources, I think money, and there doesn't seem to be much of that floating around right now.
That's true. It wouldn't be an augmentation of funds. Essentially, there is some of this work being done today. The Secret Service has been well aware of the dangers of drone activity in and around the complex there, and so there have been some investments made about, you know, counter technologies that would be utilized to disable and disarm. So it wouldn't necessarily be new infusions, but you know, being smart about how we're using our R&D dollars in concert with the centers of excellence at the universities, I think, will prove fruitful for us.